Well, let's just spend a few minutes looking at those verses that conclude chapter 11 of the book of Hebrews. It's been quite a week, hasn't it? I felt at work every day this week, there was an increasingly palpable sense of concern and anxiety amongst everybody. As people came in, the topic of conversation on the radio and conversation was all about this virus and what's going to happen tomorrow and next week and the government's advice that is changing and when Donald Trump or Boris Johnson speak, everyone's quiet and they listen intently to what he's saying. We take note when powerful men and women give us guidance about how we should live in the light of what might happen tomorrow. Problem is, we don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow, do we? And that's what they're grappling with. And there's scientists and mathematicians modelling, and we think this might happen, so and that might happen. If only we knew what would happen, then we could know how to act in the present. And the investors, well, they don't know how to invest because we don't know what's going to happen, and so the stocks and shares market has plummeted. We don't know how to invest any longer because we're not sure what's going to happen tomorrow. Now, the writer to the Hebrews knew nothing of coronavirus, but no doubt he faced worries and concerns of his day that seemed very troubling. But as he speaks to these readers and to us today, he encourages us to take note of a God who speaks promises and words of wisdom about the future. And he uses examples of people down history who, yes, have listened to people as they've given promises and guidance. But more than that, these people that he talks about have listened to the God who made this world and who makes covenants and promises to his people. And he points out that down history, God's people have taken God's words very seriously. So seriously that they've banked on his promises about the future and they've acted on them in the present. And we might look at them, and the world might look at them and call them risk takers. These men and women have been very risky with their lives. They've done things that you say are risky. They've put their lives on the line when they're banking on the words of someone they can't see. But the writer of the Hebrews says, look at them. Look at these men and women. The world calls them risk takers, but they're not really risk takers because they're banking everything on the promises of a God who has proven himself down history. He is the all-powerful God, and he's completely trustworthy, and he's proven that he's able to complete and fulfill what he says is true, and we can take his word seriously about what he says about the future. No, they weren't really risks at all. Now, as we come to our passage here, I'm not sure whether the writer is running out of time. Maybe he's looking at his watch and he's written a lot of chapters already. Or maybe he's looking at his parchment that's running out. And he says, well, I could carry on for a long time, but I can't. He says, what more should I say? For time would fail me. I'm running out of time. And so he speeds things up a little bit. And he gives us a rapid-fire list of people. He says, well, I could tell you of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, of David and Samuel, the prophets. I could tell you of so many people. And I could tell you of their faith. I could tell you of their courageous faith in dark times. This morning, I want us to consider these people and to consider three things, okay? Simple points about faith, okay? We could say this, I think. Maybe today we will see triumph. Maybe today we will see trial. But one day we will see glory. And that's what faith says. Okay, firstly, maybe today we will see triumph. The writer here gives us an example of men who triumphed. They showed courageous faith that saw triumph, okay? Let's have a think about these judges, for example, okay? They lived in dark times, like maybe you say we do today. But we read at the beginning of Judges that the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. They abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, and they went after other gods. Maybe you look at our nation and say, well, maybe that's like our times. And see what God did with men and women's courageous faith. Well, Gideon, he mentions. Gideon, he listened to the angel of the Lord as he appeared to Gideon. Gideon felt awfully weak. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, I want you, Gideon. And he took Gideon and his small army and thinned it down to nothing, to an army of just 300 men, and told them his action plan. Gideon, you're going to take some torches and trumpets, and you're going to go to the vast army of the Midianites in the night. You're going to surround them, and you're going to wave your trumpets and your torches, and that vast army are going to just run around and kill each other. The world would call him a risk taker, would you not say? Does that not sound like a risky thing to do? But Gideon, he listened to God's word. He listened to his promise and he acted. And God, through this plan, he defeated the Midianites of his day. Barak, okay, another interesting character. Barak listened to Deborah, a prophetess, and Deborah came and said, you've got to go and act. You've got to go and beat Sisera, okay? And so he did. And Sisera appeared with his 900 chariots of iron, okay? They apparently in the day that was a mean fighting machine, the iron chariot. A few months ago, we went to the Bournemouth Air Show and we looked around, maybe our iron chariots today of these huge bombs, some of them worth £1 million a pop, others 100,000, and the man said, "Yes, people are afraid of these." Well, in Barak's day, it was the iron chariots that people were afraid of. And Barak looks on, but he listens. He listens to God's word through Deborah. And he goes out and he defeats Sisera with his 900 iron chariots. Well, Samson, the angel of the Lord, appeared to his parents and told them that their son, Samson, was going to deliver... The words were, he's going to begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines. Well, Samson heard from his parents what God had said, that it would be through him. And so he acted. Boy, did he act, didn't he? You know the life of Samson, he did some crazy things. He took 300 foxes and put torches in their tails. And he, one day with the jaw of a donkey, he went and smashed those Philistines. And then in his death, he collapsed a building and killed 3,000 Philistines. What a hero, you say. And Jephthah. Well, Jephthah, again, another interesting judge. He heard of what God had done in history. He was aware of a God-centered history. And he understood how he could fit into God's history, his role in God's plan. And he acted and he rescued the Israelites from the slavery of the Ammonites. We could go on. David, where do you start? I mean, you could remember his conquest with Goliath, couldn't you, as a teenager? And he steps out. He didn't have any armor on. He was too big for him. He was a teenager, and he goes, and he's aware of God's name and God's character and God's power. And he has to look up at this mean fighting machine of Goliath, 9 foot tall, who's laughing and mocking him. And he has to talk up to him, and I'm coming in the name of the Lord of armies. And then he shows his faith in that God as he defeats Goliath. And Samuel, who in dark times when people just wanted to be like the other nations, he doesn't just say what people want to hear. He preaches and is faithful to God's word. What heroes, what triumph, what victory. And these men, okay, three things. They knew the promises of God. Verse 33 says that they obtained promises. It's a strange turn of phrase, isn't it? They obtained promises. We've been singing of God's promises this morning. They're great, aren't they? Amazing, wonderful promises. We talk about them. But these men, we read, they obtained God's promises. It wasn't enough for them to wait for God's promises to come to them. They took them. And they said, well, if God has promised this, then this is how I'm going to act. I'm going to take this promise and I'm going to step out. And I'm going to act in accordance to the promises. I'm going to show the world that I trust this promise. I'm going to secure this promise, even though I cannot see its outcome. Wow, what men and women. They were dependent on God's power. They knew the promises of God. They depended on the power of God. We read that they stopped the mouths of lions. They quenched the power of the fire. Daniel in the lion's den, obviously. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They had to stand before the most powerful man in the world who was enraged at their defiance. And they gulped. And they said, O king, our God is able to deliver us. I don't know what power you have planned for us, O king. What the ultimate setting is on that furnace. But our God is powerful to save, and he is able to deliver us. We trust in the power of our God, they could say. They trusted the promises of God. They were dependent on the power of God. And they were aware of the presence of God. Gideon, in his weakness, the angel of the Lord comes to him and says, don't worry, Gideon. The Lord will be with you. I'm with you. I, the God of armies, I'm with you. Barak, cowering in his tent, I think, at one point, Debbie has to come in and says, let the Lord go before us. He is with us. Up, come on. They were aware of the presence of God. I wonder about you this morning. Do we know the promises of God? Well, yeah, we do. And we know the power of God, what he could do. And we know that he's promised that he will always be with us. He will never forsake us. That we do life together. We walk with our God. What about us? You say, well, Adam, that is really wonderful. Thank you for encouraging me with those stories of what God has done in the past. That's great. But I'm really sorry. But that is very far removed from my situation. You see, I'm weak. I don't know about conquering kingdoms, but I can't conquer the sofa. I don't know about quenching the fire of the flames of the fire. I can't quench my drinking habit. I don't know about stopping the mouths of lions, but I can barely provide for the mouths of my own family. I don't see how I can fit into this. Well, you know, the writer of the Hebrews has been really careful about his selection of characters here. And if you just look at them again, Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, these men whom God was pleased to use as they stepped out with courageous faith were each deeply flawed individuals. Gideon, he comes and he says, look, I'm from the weakest clan. I'm the smallest in my family, God. There must be some mistake. But God says, no, there's no mistake here. I use the weak and the frail. And Barak, well, Barak, I think, is somewhat of a coward, would you not agree? When Deborah comes and says to him, look, you've got to go and get the armies ready, Barak. Barak says, Deborah, I'm not going if you don't come with me. Okay, I'll come with you, Barak. And then when he looks on and Sisera is there with his 900 iron chariots, I'm not sure what Barak is doing. I don't know whether he's hiding in his tent. He might be, because Deborah has to come to him and say, Barak, will you get up? Get up, because the Lord goes ahead of us. I see Barak as maybe a bit of a cowardly figure. Maybe that's how you feel. A bit of a cowardly figure. I know I feel like that very often. And Jephthah. Yes, God used him greatly, but when he was coming back from his victory, he said a rash thing. He said, oh, whatever comes out of my house to greet me first, I will sacrifice to the Lord. And he gets there. And who is it? It's his own daughter who comes out to greet him. What a stupid thing to say. What an awful mistake you've made, Jephthah. And Samson, we've missed Samson. Samson's life is just plagued with moral failure after another. Look at this group of people that God has been chosen to use. And this morning we look around at each other. And we say, well, I feel weak, God. I feel really weak. And I feel a coward. You know, when you hear of conquests and people like Elizabeth of Hungary, what a great woman she was. I can't even tell people at work that I belong to Jesus. I'm a coward, you say. Or maybe you say, Adam, you don't know what stupid things I've done in the past. You don't know how I battle with my tongue, how it runs away with me at times. I don't feel like I can serve God in any ministry. You don't know what's happened in my marriage, you say. My relationships have been messed up in the past. God can't use me, surely. And God says, yes, I can. And I do. And I will. You see, tomorrow, whatever has happened or is going on in your life, tomorrow when you wake up, you can pray to God and you can say, God, I know your promises. I know your power. I know you're with me, the God of armies. And you can use me. And maybe today I will see triumph. Maybe today as I step out of my comfort zone and maybe start serving in a ministry that I know God has been prompting me to serve in, but I've been hiding back from, maybe God has been burdening you with some kind of service for him, maybe to go abroad, maybe to serve in your community, maybe to your family, in your church. And you've been cowarding, maybe you felt weak, maybe you felt a failure, and God says, no. No, trust my promises, trust my power, go in my presence. Maybe today, triumph. You can say it tomorrow morning. God, maybe today, triumph. But maybe today, trial. You see, the writer of the Hebrews, to the Hebrews, doesn't hide from the hard reality of life. And he goes on in verse 35, and he says, yes, women received back their dead by resurrection, but some were tortured. That word tortured, I understand, is quite a specific word, and it literally means to be to be racked. He says, yes, some people were stretched out on the rack. They had their hands fastened into a rack and a wrench was turned as their limbs were torn and their joints were pulled out of place. They were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. There are many extra-biblical stories of men and women who were stretched out on the rack, and they were said, look, you can choose. You can choose life if you just ditch this whole covenant God thing or the rack. And in the past, men and women have said, I'm going to go for the rack. Because I know this promise of my God to be true, so true that there's something better ahead, a better life than this life, they could say. And you can destroy my body, but you cannot destroy my soul. And so they trusted the promise for a better life ahead. They were tortured. He goes on and says, others suffered mocking. That's verbal abuse. That's people coming and saying horrible things to you. I think maybe he could be thinking here of Jeremiah. We read in Jeremiah chapter 20, Jeremiah is pouring out his heart. He says, I've become a laughing stock. All the day, everyone mocks me. Sometimes we felt hurt, don't we, when somebody comes and mocks us? Jeremiah looks on and everyone, all the day, everyone is mocking me. It was getting him down. He was mocked and ridiculed. The writer carries on. They suffered mocking and flogging and chains and imprisonment. I think he's carrying on talking about Jeremiah. In Jeremiah 37, we read, the officials were enraged with Jeremiah and they beat him and imprisoned him. In chapter 38 of Jeremiah, he's thrown down into a cistern or a well and he sinks into the mud. This is what courageous faith might look like. He carries on. They were stoned, possibly Jeremiah still. They were sawn in two. I think he's talking about Isaiah here. Tradition has it that Isaiah was literally sawn in two for his faith. They went about in skins and sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. Possibly Elisha, Elijah, but many, many others down history. This isn't triumphant language, you say? No, it's not. But neither is it avoiding the harsh reality of life that when you show courageous faith, you might have to say, that promotion isn't going to happen for me any longer. You might have to say that my goals and objectives are going to now have to be different because I've known Jesus. That comfortable lifestyle might have to change. You know, I was very much affected as a young man by a man called Werner Wright. He became a professor. He was the second authority on rheumatoid arthritis in the world. And he traveled around treating sultans and kings around the world. But at the same time, he went out in his lunchtime and he stood on a soapbox and he preached in the streets and told people about heaven and about hell and about how they could know life. And he went down to the motorbike lads on a Friday evening and he shared Jesus with them. And wherever he was in the world, meeting with sultans and kings, he made sure that he was back for Friday evening youth club. Because it was important to share Jesus with the teenagers in his church. And one day, one of the doctors in his hospital came up to him and said, Werner, you see, thing is, Werner, you know, you could make it. You could really make it, Werner. In the medical profession, You can go straight. You're at the top of your field, Werner, but you've got to stop that street preaching and that motorbike thing that you do in the week. And I'm rushing back for the youth club, Werner. What is going on? You've just got to rein it in. And Werner looked at him, and I'm sure with a big smile on his face, Werner would have said, no. No, my priority is not promotion. It's not a reputation. But it's sharing Jesus. It's extending his kingdom in this world. Because I know, he probably said something like Elizabeth said, look, I know of an inheritance that is ahead that never perishes, spoils, or fades. And it awaits me in heaven, and it can await you too. If you come and are part of his kingdom, that's what faith looked like in Werner's life. It looked like it in Elizabeth's life. It looked like it in so many's down history. I wonder, what does it look like in our life? Maybe triumph today, maybe trial today, but one day there will be glory. For each of these, we're told in verse 39, all of these were commended through their faith, yet they did not receive what was promised. They looked forward to it and it was a bit blurry. But the writer of the Hebrews says, what about you and us today? We live in the messianic age. We look back to Jesus and we can see when all of these promises were fulfilled in Jesus. We look on and marvel in awe as we see our God stepping into our world in the incarnation. We see his power demonstrated as he shows us what his kingdom looks like. As he tells us that his presence is with us, God with us. I will never leave you or forsake you. And then we see, as has been shown in the past, in weakness made strong. What is more weak than a man hanging on a cross in the dark? You say, what a risky thing. But Jesus was no risk taker. No, because he knew that through the weakness of the cross, the power of God will be demonstrated as he fulfills everything that they were trusting in. As he defeats sin, and as 3 days later the earth shook, as the Son of God rises again to defeat sin and death and Satan. He's alive. He's alive. And you and I today, we look back to that day, and we're no risk takers. As we step out today and we're different from other people and we say we know the promises and we know his power and we know he's with us. And when I go to work tomorrow and the way I act is going to reflect this, I can say maybe triumph today as I act differently now. And I say maybe trial today. I don't know what's going to happen to me. But one day, glory. There will be glory. Of that we can be absolutely certain because we look back to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Amen. We're going to sing a great hymn together now. We're going to sing Christ, the sure and steady anchor. Whatever happens in the coming days and weeks and months, be assured of this, Christ is our sure and steady anchor who will never fail us. Maybe triumph today, maybe trial, but one day there will be glory.